Welcome to episode 211 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Craig Neeb from the International Speedway Corporation and NASCAR.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who spends 50% of his time at sports venues assessing signage and activations. You're nodding right now, aren't you? Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and most of the time when I am at a stadium or a sports venue, I am looking at the signage and assessing activations, and I'm sure a lot of you are. You do as well. I did mention it in the chat with Stace McGrainer when we were at the Warriors game. That was what we did for half the game. So if you do listen and you haven't connected, please do so on LinkedIn. Sean Callanan should be able to be found on LinkedIn. If I haven't connected with you yet, I'm not doing my job right, but please reach out. Tell me that you listen to the podcast so I know to accept your LinkedIn connection and love to hear from you. Otherwise, you can contact me, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com or at Sean Callanan in the Sports Geek Nation Slack community or on Twitter. And as always, I love working with Sports Geek podcast listeners. If you would like my help, if you would like my help with a project you're working on, simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/work and let's have a time to have a chat. Some of the things we're working on at the minute, we're developing a chatbot that soon will be ready for release with an NFL team. We've just recently done a rebrand and digital strategy work for a boxing event promoter that's going to be launching for tickets soon. Building out some commercial digital activation proposals as part of the digital to dollars process. You can check that out at digitaltodollars.com. Working on a digital education program for athletes, helping them understand how they can use platforms, digital and social, and be good digital citizens. Also doing some work in the podcasting space, helping league understand how they can better leverage podcasting and really find their place in the medium, and also to looking at what might be a new episode format and maybe potentially a new platform for this podcast. So stay tuned, but if you've got any suggestions, please send them through. As I said, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com is my email. You can get me anytime or at Sean Callanan on most platforms. Really happy to have my guest on this week, Craig Neeb, from the International Speedway Corporation and NASCAR. We talk about his dual role there and his long career in motorsports and how he got started with International Speedway Corporation and how the business of motorsport, especially NASCAR, is a little bit different to other pro sports in the way that tracks, teams, events, how it all fits together. It doesn't sort of fit in the same model. And then some of the challenges and some of the opportunities in that space and how technology has changed the space in NASCAR. And some really cool tech that they're applying just around governance, especially around adhering to rules and making sure the cars are all within specifications and how technology is completely transforming that. So this, I hope you enjoy my chat. I enjoyed having it. Here is my chat with Craig Neeb. Very happy to be joined by the Executive Vice President and Chief Innovation and Development Officer for the International Speedway Corporation, NASCAR, Craig Neeb. Welcome to the podcast.
Great, Sean. Happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, I wanted to sort of get a bit of your history and background in the world of sports and technology. You've been you've been at IC for a long time now, but take us back to how did you get into the world of sports business?
Sure, it was I was very lucky, but I started with International Speedway Corporation in 2000, so this is my 18th year, actually going on my 19th year within the sport. I was the first chief information officer hired by International Speedway Corporation, and the reason I had the opportunity was I was winding up a career that I had started with Burger King Corporation in the early 1980s and worked through various divisions and spinoffs and things like that. But I was basically in the supply chain business, you know, servicing restaurants and all that for many, many years. And then we had gotten acquired by another company, and that company was looking to move the headquarters to Dallas. And I really didn't want to go work in Dallas. And this was in 1999. And I'd been working with IBM. They were coming in doing our Y2K assessment. And in parallel, they were doing an assignment here with International Speedway Corporation. And they were doing an assessment of technology and organization change and things like that. And part of their recommendation was to find a CIO. So when they found out, they being IBM, found out that I wasn't interested in moving on with my career, they recommended me as a candidate to International Speedway Corporation. Had an opportunity to interview during the Daytona 500 in 2000 and meeting with the France family. After that that big weekend between racing and interviews, I was afforded the opportunity to come work here. So it was a great privilege and an opportunity. I didn't have any experience in NASCAR prior to that. I was always a big sports fan, so I certainly knew sports. I knew about the Daytona 500, but there was a lot to learn about NASCAR at that time, and it was exciting because it was certainly at its one of its biggest growth periods, you know, during the early 2000s as well. So
for the people,
that's how it all came about.
So for the people who don't know, what is International Speedway Corporation as a business, as a sports business? What is it for the people who listeners might be in Australia or Europe not quite understanding the makeup and what ISC does? What's the primary goal of ISC?
Yeah, ISC is a multi-facility owner, and their principal business is promoting motorsports events, of which the premier series happens to be NASCAR here in the United States. I mean, we do have other racing. We have sports car racing, motorcycle racing, IndyCar racing as well, but, you know, the principal is NASCAR. So our, you know, what we have to do is, you know, sell tickets, sell sponsorship. We have a food and beverage company. We have partnerships for merchandise, but, you know, our main business is really putting on live events and all the supporting revenue that goes around, you know, putting on those live events. You know, it just happens that what we're a little bit different from a team sport is that we don't have a home team, if you will, that plays X amount of games in our stadium. You know, we have one or two major events that come to these properties every year. So that's really what, you know, what our core business is.
So effectively, yeah, you're promoting races and owner of tracks and driving that. So you're coming into the role in 2000, as you've said, coming out of the Y2K era as a geek that made a lot of cash in fixing up the Y2K bugs. You know, I understand that time and space, but what was the tech scene like going into ISC as the CEO then for all the tracks and all the different parts of the ISC business?
Yeah, it was shocking to me how many years I felt they were behind the technology curve. You know, at that time, you know, they were only selling three of the tracks were selling tickets on the internet,
yep.
Which was surprising. Several of them didn't even have websites yet at that time. And so they really were not scaling technology on a holistic basis. They were basically letting each track kind of do its own thing and run its own, you know, infrastructure. And, you know, it was, there was no continuity, no consistency, no real business view of technology. It was really just more of a, what I call utility view. So it was just, you know, keeping the lights on. We need to have, you know, we need to have PCs, we need to have phones at work, but it really wasn't looking at it from a business view and how does really technology support a business view. So that was in a lot of ways a great opportunity being at such a green field when it came to the use of technology to build out a strategy that really demonstrated the value over time.
And so I think we met many years ago at Seat conference, and you sit there with colleagues in the CIO, CTO space that are running stadiums and venues in a pro sports point of view. How is an ISC track and a racetrack different to a baseball stadium or a football stadium? What are some of the different challenges from a technology point of view that a track presents?
Yeah, you know, I'm often very envious of my colleagues that have sports venues like that, like a team that have, you know, let's say in baseball, you have 80 home games, and your ability to invest in technology and try new technology over an 80 game season gives you a lot of opportunity. Where at a facility, a racetrack facility, it is usually 10 times larger from a scale standpoint. You know, you're looking at 400 to 600 acres of property that a racetrack facility is situated on. And then on top of that, you're trying to then find technology that you can afford that supports 2, maybe 3 major event weekends a year. Yeah. So how do you amortize that investment and get the return on it as well is really a challenge, and manage it to the scale of those facilities. You know, here in Daytona, our front stretch alone seats 101,000 seats, and it's almost a mile long, the grandstand. So you think about what it takes, you know, to put in the technology, run the technology, support the technology in a facility that large, and make it cost effective over, you know, just a couple times a year. It's a real challenge.
Yeah, it's. I mean, motorsport is unique in that way. I know, speaking to Zara, talking about Formula One, is that you've got they're effectively major events. Every single race is like a major event, like a tennis grand slam or those kind of things where it is this big bang. You've got to do lots of planning for the short amount of period that the race is on, and then but the expectation of the fans are that they want that type of connectivity and facilities that they're seeing at other pieces. So it makes it really, really tough for you in that space.
Yep, it certainly does. It because you got that one bite at the apple to have a great fan experience, and so you want everything to work and work flawlessly. But you know, you got to test everything out well in advance. I mean, we have a team of technical people that start multiple weeks out, and they've created kind of a cookbook of what they need to check off the list to be sure everything that needs to work is working, because it hasn't been used in maybe 6 months to a year. So it really does add a lot of interesting, detail that you have to go through, that when you're operating on a day-to-day basis, you got a pretty good handle on things.
So, again, so we've got your role and you've been at ISC for now 18 years. So again, for people who don't understand the motorsport space, explain, I guess, where NASCAR fits and what it is to ISC, because it's not like traditional pro sports. If we look at the NFL, and the NFL has teams and then stadiums, and that's how it operates. Motorsport is unique in the sense that NASCAR drives sport, and you've got teams and tracks, and it's a little bit different in that sense.
Yeah, so we have three primary stakeholders in our sport of NASCAR. We talked about the tracks and what they do. They're the ones that have the direct interface with the fans and selling tickets and event experience. And then you have NASCAR themselves. And, the way we view NASCAR is they're the league. They're the ones who come up with the rules. They're officiating. They're ones who set policy and guidelines around how the sport operates. And then you have the individual teams. And what's different about our sport, it's not like where the NFL or other major sports have franchises. There's no really franchises. It's everybody has a chance to compete. So if you have enough money and you want to start a team, you're able to do that. I mean, obviously you have to follow the rule books and you have to be a member of NASCAR, but you're able to create a team. And as long as you get your driver certified, you can get in and compete. So it's not limited to just a set number of teams. There's up to 50 people can qualify any race weekend. Now, only a certain amount will actually be allowed to race, and we only allow the top 40 to compete. But it's very interesting that the aspect that from week to week, it can, the number of teams that are competing can vary from every one of those weeks. And, as long as, again, they follow the policies and the guidelines. But again, NASCAR is the one who sets those rules, and, they're the ones then, that manage the competition itself on the track.
So, as I said in the intro, you're Executive Vice President, Chief Innovation and Development Officer for ISC and NASCAR. So you're across both. Explain us how that role came about, and I guess what does that entail?
So my role at ISC has evolved since I was the CIO. And one of the things, the reason it evolved, because of the value we were providing with technology, it became evident to the business that I was able to think about new business opportunities, new ways of looking at our business for revenue generation outside of the traditional arms, new ways of, you know, leveraging technology, leveraging our properties. And so what had happened was, on the NASCAR side, they were absent a CTO and a CIO for several years, and they really felt that they were getting behind. And there's common family ownership over both ISC and NASCAR, and actually the originators of the sport itself, the France family, are on the third generation of those, of that family is who oversees both the properties. And what they identified was, hey, here's an opportunity where we have, you know, leadership who has this kind of experience, has taken innovation, taken new ideas, leveraging technology. Why not apply that across the entire holistic industry and have a view of it from up even a little bit higher, so that we can connect more of the dots, so that we're not operating in the individual stakeholder silos. We're actually starting to operate in a more, you know, cross-functional, cross-synergistic opportunity to really do the, hopefully the cliche of 1+1=3, and leverage the fan experience. Because, you know, at the end of the day, NASCAR's fans, you know, they transcend not only the event itself, but they're, you know, it's the fans who watch it on TV, the fans who stream it, the fans who follow it, you know, on radio. How do you start to look at the fan experience and have influence on the fan experience from a holistic standpoint? And how does technology play a part in that? And that was really the impetus around the decision to give me the opportunity to sit at this, you know, this great opportunity to really to look at it that way and start to really measure some opportunities to see where we could create those synergies and look at that experience on a more holistic basis versus just the individual stakeholder basis.
So that gives you that wider remit rather than going from a track event race sort of focus that you had from an ISC point of view, to that wider, what is the NASCAR fan doing? How are they engaging with us? How are they engaging with all the different tracks? How are they engaging with drivers? Where does digital play? Is that where it's been a wider remit for you, you know, looking at things from a NASCAR point of view?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It does. And it's amazing, being in the sport as long as I have, some of the things I was not aware of and the opportunities that were out there, because it was such a narrow focus in some ways. So it's been tremendous to really have that, gain that visibility. But what makes it even better for me in this role is the ability to influence it. Well, you know, being on just the track side, there really wasn't a lot of ability, even when I did see opportunities, to have influence. Now, you know, I'm actually being pulled into it to ask to help and support that influence.
So how do you adjust that balance? Because, you know, your strategy and digital is a part of that for a track. Say 2 years ago, when you were looking at things from an ISC point of view, it would have been customer service at the track, and how do we engage fans at the track? How do we get more people to the event? That kind of focus, to then also be saying, well, we actually want to make sure that we're talking to the fans that can't be at Daytona this week, and making sure that they're engaged for the next race. How do you balance what would be a traditional a track's point of view, to sort of have them have the wider, you know, rising tides lift all boats type approach to have the overall sport and NASCAR overall best interest at heart?
Sean, it's a great question. It's a fine line that I've been learning to balance in the last 9 months that I've been in this role. It is something that there's a sensitivity to the goals and objectives of the individual stakeholders, to make sure that you don't make a decision that compromises their ability. So you really got to find where you can make the two add up to something more than what had been in its individual pieces. And so I would say we haven't done a lot yet. We're really still mapping that out, but we are finding some interesting areas that I think you can find areas that complement each other, and still provide the end goal and objective for each of the individual stakeholders.
And where does like what we've seen, Major League Baseball with BAM, and you know what the NBA is doing from a league point of view in its digital space, especially pushing really hard into social. Where does that fit from a NASCAR point of view to better connect with the fans that aren't in the stands? What have been some of the initiatives that NASCAR's looking to do in that space, in that pure digital space?
Sure. So for example, I think the BAM example is a really good one. So, you know, all the mobile apps that we've developed over the years at ISC have been really focused around the event experience itself. Yep. So, you know, you use the maps, you use the schedules, you use all those things that are relevant. But at the end of the day, we want fans to be NASCAR fans when they leave the event.
Yep.
And so how do you transfer what that inline, event experience app was over to the NASCAR.com mobile app and vice versa? How do you get somebody who's on the NASCAR.com mobile app who happens to live in Daytona Beach, Florida, to remind them that, hey, by the way, the Daytona 500 is coming in February, you might want to go out there. So we're looking how ultimately can you have one app that can transform itself depending on where you are, or just a little bit of information we can garner from you to know that, hey, you are attending the Daytona 500. So you're going to get all these set of features within the app now to enhance your experience at the venue. And then if you're not at the venue, we still know you're a fan because you came to an event. Now, how do we make sure you're leveraging the NASCAR.com mobile app so that when you're not there, you're getting updates on the race, you're playing fantasy, things like that. So that's one of the big plans we're working on right now, is that being able to have that ability within a single app to have that transformation experience depending on what you are really experiencing.
Yeah, I mean, because it does start giving that connectedness to the fan to go, well, this is the live experience, which really does lock in the fan. Digital is great, but the experiencing real life, the hearing, the listening and the noise that the cars generate, and the experience of being with 100,000 people when they're going down the straight, like that, it's really hard to replicate in digital. But if you can then get people to your tracks, it starts locking them in. So having that connected experience and on the digital side definitely helps try to, I guess, lock in those fans.
Yep. No, absolutely. It is very difficult to convey that in the digital world. But, again, if there's enough things that you can tease people with that create, why it's different to come to the event versus, staying at home and watching it. I think one of the things that really differentiates, NASCAR is it's not a single event that, kicks off at noon and ends at 3. Mm-hmm. It's a multi-day event. I mean, it's a sequence of things that are occurring, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in most cases. And a lot of that is a whole social part of it. There's a bunch of social experiences, different ways to consume it. And sharing those experiences digitally, so it's not necessarily just cars going around a track, but it's the infield camping experience. Yep. It's the autograph sessions. It's the access on pit road that you get that you don't see on TV. It's those things, sharing those nuggets of experiences digitally. And then obviously using social in that space too, because there's no better, credibility and authenticity than fans telling fans what a great time it is and why they're doing it. And incorporate that into the story is really some of the things that we definitely focus on to create that energy and excitement.
So how do you sufficiently resource that as a, it's not a problem, but as an engagement to be able to say, hey, we want to engage people at the track, because it, if we look at a, pro sports model, you'll have, a team that's engaging and a stadium that are working hand in hand that are trying to engage the fans and amplify, and you'd have a league media outlet that are also pushing it. How do you get all of the pieces and sort of have some, level playing, consistency of effort across all the different partners, being track, NASCAR as the organizing body, and the teams, to make sure that you're covering off that effort, that you are making sure that content is getting amplified and that those fans are being engaged? How do you make sure that's consistent? Because as you said before, anybody can
say, hey, we're going to be a race team. We're going to be part of NASCAR. Their focus is cars, and their focus is, you know, going fast. Their focus isn't, hey, how can we build out a digital media team to promote what we're doing? How do you balance that from a NASCAR point of view?
Yeah, that's, I would say, one of the successes we've had as an industry is that the NASCAR several years ago created an integrated marketing communications team, and call it IMC for short. And what they do is they go out to the race facilities many weeks in advance of their actual event, and they talk about, you know, they cross communicate as what are the important things that are going to be happening at that event that may be different, unique, compelling. And then they make sure that they integrate that with their industry communications, and then vice versa. The tracks then hear from the industry what's important from an industry perspective, yep, what unique things might be going on and stuff like that. And they build that into it. And so they already know who's going to come on property from NASCAR. There's already dedicated people at the track. And the other nice thing is being, on the ISC side, owning 12 facilities, we've also get experience and see everything that's going across all our tracks. So we also share best practices where we learn from other facilities that worked well and didn't work, and make sure we integrate that into the plan too. So all those pieces come together pretty early on before the event actually occurs. And it's pretty well orchestrated to make sure that there is a cohesive communication strategy and messaging that goes on, so that, you know, one's not deviating, you know, way far away from what the key message is. We all know what all the hashtags, what are the important hashtags for the weekend to be sharing. We actually communicate that to the broadcast partners as well. So it's a pretty well orchestrated experience to make sure we don't miss anything. It's not perfect every time, but I would say, you know, in the last several years, they've got it pretty well nailed down, where I would say we capture a good majority of what the key themes are.
Yeah, you did talk about hashtags there recently. There's been now the Twitter emojis and the hashtags, and now you're actually putting those hashtags and the emojis on the cars. So people, it starts to form those storytelling, but also creating those heroes of the drivers and deepening the connections, because the fans end up, they want to be backing a team or a driver, and in the same way that, you know, the NBA is a player-led league, you're sort of following the same path.
Yep. No, that's exactly it. It's, you know, I think what we find in any sport, you know, the success of the sport really relies on the stars of the sport, because they're the ones who create the storylines and they're the ones who, you know, create that drama that causes people to want to watch it. So it's important that we continue to build that affinity to those stars, and they have that personal connection.
And from so because you are chief innovation and development, you've had an oversight over all, I guess, technology. What other cool tech is sort of being rolled out and innovation is happening in motorsport? Because it's not all fan facing. Racing's a highly technical sport, and there's lots of data and everything. What else is also happening in NASCAR that where new technology is starting to change the game a little bit?
Yeah, I think one of the really exciting technologies that was rolled out this year is how we, from a competition standpoint, measure the cars from week to week. And what I mean by that, I'm going to step back and digress a little bit, is that in the past, you have different manufacturers who come in with slightly different body parts and configurations. So a Ford versus a Toyota, versus a Chevy. We try to make the body styles resemble as closely as possible as what you'd buy in the showroom as a consumer. And so, in doing that, each team has to, their cars have to fit a certain configuration within those, what we call templates.
Yep.
And in the past, these were all manual templates that, cars would go through in what they call an inspection process. And
this is NASCAR applying its rules to say, this is the height of cars and this is how low they need to be, all of those kind of things.
Yep. How far out the quarter panels come or in, the door panels, all that. Well, that was all done with these manual templates, and they'd have to be shipped from event to event. Well, this year, using some really cool technology that was used in other industries, a car now goes into a tent that's pretty well black. It's got, I think it's six cameras that shoot over, I think it's over a million dots onto the car.
Yep.
And then there's scanners in that read those dots and create basically a heat map of that car. And then they apply that heat map of that car against, is it a Toyota template? Is it a Chevy template? Is it a Ford template? And then you can see, you know, based on red, green, or blue, green being obviously it's all within a certain yep. specification. Blue, it's outside of it. And red, it's inside of it. It draws a heat map so that they can immediately tell with this scanning process that takes 45 seconds, that used to take 15 minutes with the manual templates,
yep.
if a car is really within a certain specification.
So it's effectively taking almost a live, like a 3D scan and bring yep. it, just dropping it into the computer and saying, yes, this is on and this is off.
Yep. And they barrel it, send that picture right to the team and say, you're out of spec here. You need to come back with it when it's back in spec. And why with exactly the amount of, you know, centimeters or meters or millimeters difference it is, things like that, they're able to do that.
And fans love that, I guess, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. what's happening kind of thing. Has that been something that becomes like almost gets brought into, you know, into broadcast or into the storytelling element of saying, this is some of the technology, this is why everyone's level, this is why it's a level playing field. It's really about the drivers, not, you know, and what they're doing because we've made sure everyone is on the same, following all the rules?
Yeah, I would say we've done an okay job with that. I think that's an opportunity we need to get a little bit better with and really kind of promote the different technology that it really is in the sport and how that really helps to manage it and create it. So there was a little bit of it at the beginning of the year, but I think, you know, again, that's something that we need to remind ourselves of, because sometimes I think we're a little too close to it and we take it for granted, but the amplification of that, you know, out to especially new fans who may at some time have a perception that NASCAR is kind of old school and it doesn't really have a lot of innovation. I think that's why it's important we need to communicate that and be a little more effective of getting that messaging out.
One thing I did want to ask, and it sort of leads in from that question around reaching new fans, what's been your analysis and looking into the world of esports from a NASCAR point of view, and how have you started to look into that space to potentially tap into the market that is either playing games, playing motorsport games? What's the opportunity there for NASCAR?
I'll tell you that, Sean, that's one of the areas I'm spending a lot of my time on, and because I think there is something that is really unique and relevant in our sport that differentiates us. Because, you know, motorsports video games have probably one of the oldest games that have been yeah. around. And even if you go to the arcade days, you know, sitting behind a wheel in an arcade and, you know, having a screen in front of you was very common. We have actually two paths. We have what we call the mass market side. We have a partnership with a company called 704 Games, who produces a product called Heat, NASCAR Heat, which simulates every one of the tracks on the NASCAR circuit. It also has all the intellectual property for each of the drivers and their cars and marks. So people can actually, you know, using either PS4s, there's console based games as well for PCs, you know, as well as Xbox, be able to play that game. And it's sold, you know, through all your typical retail distribution outlets as well. So that's one. And we're actually now talking about, you know, how do we create more esports tournaments and potentially leagues with that as well.
Yep.
As we go into 19. As a matter of fact, we just actually started a tournament we're in our playoffs right now that we started this weekend in NASCAR. And so every week we're having an online tournament and we have a winner that comes out, and the nine winners leading into the final race in Homestead, which is the 10th race, will all be flown into Homestead. And we're going to working with a company that's got an esports, a portable esports arena, Allied.
Yep.
And they're going to bring their truck in and they're going to set that up. And we're actually going to have the finale in Homestead at the same time we're having the finale for the Monster Energy Cup Series and the Camping World Truck Series as well, the Xfinity Series. So we'll actually be crowning four champions that weekend down in Homestead as well. So that's one area we're really excited about. And then what's even most exciting is that we have a relationship with a company called iRacing, which is a full simulator style video game. It's actually a simulator. And that product, I mean, you can get very sophisticated that, you know, from you get an actual driver's seat, you get steering wheel, shifter, brake, you know, all the pedals. And we have two series on that. We have a youth series we call the Ignite series, which is for 12 to 16 year olds. And then we have the Peak series, which is Peak Antifreeze is the, you know, the brand on that from an entitlement. And that's for anybody 18 and older that has money and prize money associated to it as well, too. And we actually have, you know, competitions that go on a weekly basis throughout the year. And then we will crown a champion. What's really what we're going to really try to do in the coming years is really use that as our driver development, because what we've actually seen is we actually have a driver, William Byron, who runs for Hendrix Motorsports in the 24 car, actually trained his whole life on that product on iRacing, on that simulator, and actually was able to take the move from the virtual world into the real world because that's how good that simulator was. And I don't think any other sport, you know, and no offense to NBA 2K or Madden, you're not gonna get a chance at the NBA or the NFL playing those games. where I think with iRacing and the competitive side of that and being able to participate in these leagues, you will, you know, there's a good chance that we're gonna really start to create that as our farm system for potentially future drivers in NASCAR.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, speaking to Tom Hall's previously, when he was at Formula E, they ran a similar program of having races with fans playing the game. There's so many different pieces to the puzzle that fit in with what you're trying to do from a track point of view, from a fan development point of view, to convert the virtual fan to an in real life fan. The fact that you've got tracks there and you can start supporting tournaments gives you other events to potentially run at the tracks. There's really a lot to like in that space. The fact that then you put gamers up against actual drivers playing the same game and they're holding their own. And when you have a success story like William Byron to be able to actually get in the car and be able to do it as well, it's definitely a pathway and a development pathway from a development of the driver as well as fans.
Yep. No, it absolutely is. It's something that we're very excited about. So yeah, a lot to come on that one, but we're knee deep in that right now.
Yeah. And for mine, like the activation piece that you can run out at all your tracks, and you know, having people test out, drive, makes it, you know, family friendly. That's a massive opportunity and just further extends the fan experience, whether it's participating and playing and testing it out, or true esports where people are watching, like you're doing now, the tournaments that are happening on race day. So you're either looking at the track or you're looking at a screen, someone playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. And again, you know, we hope that those, you know, those engagements, those opportunities to get people, you know, teased it out and then hopefully hooked, that, you know, they really do become a fan for life. So, you know, we got to try everywhere where they are. And, you know, I think the youth, you know, the generation now that's coming up doesn't seem to have the same interest in cars as, you know, maybe other generations. But we believe through video gaming that we may be able to transform that.
As someone who's done a hot lap in a NASCAR, it is a different experience. Let me tell you, know, I don't need to tell you, but I'm telling the listeners, it is a different experience. And there is nothing like it. So again, getting people to the track and understanding that is the first challenge. And once you do, you obviously win them over that once they're there.
Yep, that's our mantra. We live by that all the time. And it's so true because, and yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, preconceived notions about what it is and what it isn't. And it, you said this earlier, Sean, it's that visceral. It really impacts all your sensory, all your senses, and you get the smell, the feel, the sound. It really is something you got to experience.
So we did open with your story of your interview at ISC way back in 2000. Tell us a little bit about the Daytona 500. You know, what makes it so special, and how has that event and that race evolved over your time at ISC?
You know, it certainly is, you know, our Super Bowl. It's our biggest event. It's kind of ironic. We start the season with our biggest event.
Yeah.
But it really is the kickoff, and it's about the pageantry. It's about the, you know, our sport has years and years of family history, and it comes out in that. It's something that celebrities love to be part of because, you know, it is such an amazing spectacle. There's days of racing leading up to the big event. You know, it starts on the weekend before. There's the races on Saturday. There's races on Sunday. Then they come back and they race Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it all leads up into the finale on Sunday. And, you know, it's one of those iconic brands, the brand Daytona itself, that has a global reach to it. And so, you know, the amount of viewership that it comes with that as well, the excitement leading into it, the anticipation of kicking off the season with your biggest event, it creates a little bit of stress and anxiety too, as yep. well from the competitor's standpoint, because it's one of those must wins, you know, you want to be part of. And then the racetrack itself has so much history and, you know, so many huge moments that occurred there. And, you know, everybody wants to be in victory circle at the end of that race. So it brings out the best in everybody. It just is one of those, you know, just high energy weekends that culminates with that final race. And candidly, it sets the tone for a lot of drivers. You know, if they do well in that race, it gives them that confidence and the enthusiasm, you know, to push on, which is a really long season. You have 36 yep. races, so that's one of 35, but you start off with the biggest win, and it really does energize you for the year.
And from a fan experience point of view, we've seen major events and, you know, start taking a festival feel. You know, multiple different fan zones, sponsors upping their game on how they activate and, you know, setting the bar higher and higher. Have you been taking lessons from different major events, whether it be the Super Bowl or the US Open or what's happening at different events, and having that, seeing that the growth of that type of those trends happening at Daytona as well?
Yeah, we absolutely have. As a matter of fact, we kicked off one of the most significant capital investments we made as a company back in 2012, 2013, where we invested $400 million in reimagining this property into what we call the first motorsport stadium, where we did take the lessons and learnings from a lot of great stadiums and arenas and fan experiences that were built to them, and actually converted that into a motorsports experience, which had never been done before. It was yep. a big bet, huge. And so it exceeded everybody's expectations. You know, you talk to, you know, the broadcast partners, to industry people, to fans, to sponsors who are activating in other sports. And, you know, this project was really transformational for motorsports and really did raise the bar. It's kind of ironic because when this track was built in 1958 and opened in 1959, it was the first super speedway ever in NASCAR. And it really was a transformational moment for the sport. And it took vision, imagination, and, you know, a little bit of daring and creativity to get it across the goal line. And we applied those same attributes when we thought about the redesign of this property, because you're taking a very historical property and trying to transform it to what a new fan experience needs to be, but not lose the history of what we call the hollow grounds of NASCAR here in Daytona. And bringing those two together was, you know, something that, you know, we had to be sensitive on both sides. And you know, I think, you know, anybody who's come and seen it, either especially the ones who knew it before and then after, we've only gotten huge accolades and, you know, just about what that really has done for that experience.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is terrific, especially for older stadiums and precincts that do go through that renovation and try to bring in the new. You do have to balance making sure you don't wipe out the old and the nostalgia and, like you said, the hallowed ground. You still want to have that feeling that you get when you walk in there, that's where it is. But new amenities and new experiences, you want to be able to get that blend right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I'm looking forward to checking it out. SEEK Conference is going to be in Daytona next year, so I'm looking forward to checking out the facilities.
Yeah, we're excited to have everybody here. We're so proud of it, and we love showing it off, so we're looking forward to it.
Well, before we finish, the Sports Geek Closing Five, do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, the first one I went was a New York Mets game at Shea Stadium. It probably was like in the 1970s. We'll just say that.
70 something.
That was when it was during the days of when the Mets were really good.
Yeah, so a long time ago is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Apologies to all the Mets fans out there. You would have been to a fair few sports events in your time, and I'm sure NASCAR has a very unique food and gourmet scene. What's been your favorite food at a sports event?
You know, I'm going old school and traditional. It's the hot dog. There's something about a hot dog at any sporting event that just makes it good and different.
You would have seen some crazy food and tailgating setups in the camping areas around many NASCAR event, I'm sure.
Oh, we have some really unique ones, and we actually, like you said, introduced some crazy ones too. We have in Talladega, we got one that's called the Big One on the Boulevard. It's a 1 pound meatball that's fried. That is just decadent as all heck. But that's we definitely try and experiment with some things.
Do you have like ambulance and cardiac machines next to that 1 pound meatball fried? That's ridiculous, but yeah, it's sort of like it's on that bucket list. You've got to have it, even if the meatball is the same size as your head. I'm sure there's plenty of fans.
That's right.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
I'm a weather guy. I got to see what's going on in the weather, both, you know, locally as well as what's the upcoming event. So it's, you know, always have our eye on the weather to make sure we got a successful weekend ahead of us.
Terrific. Is there someone that the podcast listeners should follow that maybe you read or follow, and why would they?
I don't have any particular person, Sean, that I would advocate. I think in my career I've always been very, you know, keen on mentors, you know, within whatever business I'm in, and just, you know, and you know, listening to them and following their advice and counsel. I certainly like to stay fairly neutral when it comes to, you know, either media outlets or things like that, because I think everybody has opinions and yep, certainly everybody welcome to them. So I kind of scour a lot of things and absorb it and try to form my own views and opinions.
Terrific. And lastly, what social media platform is your MVP? And so you can answer this as yourself, what platform you go to, but then also potentially from a ISC NASCAR point of view, what platform is working the best from that point of view?
Yeah, me personally, I'm certainly a follower and listener on Twitter. I'd certainly get a lot of viewpoints and a lot of news pretty quickly through that. So that's just for me personally. But I think Snapchat has been one that we've leveraged a lot from an industry standpoint to really kind of tell the story of a lot of the fan experiences that we have. You know, when we talked earlier about, what goes on in the infield and camping experiences and what goes on in the garage and pre-race activities, you know, we've worked very closely with Snapchat, and that's been a good use of social media tool for us for telling those stories.
It is really important to reach that demographic. But again, because mm-hmm. you've got an event that is an event I want to broadcast, then that's why that sort of partnership works, because people want to say, look at me, this is where I am. They're automatically going to be sharing it to their friends. That it really grows that word of mouth piece.
Yep, it definitely does.
So where can, lastly, where can people find you, connect with you, send you a tweet? Where can people find you on the internet?
Probably LinkedIn is probably where I have my most connections.
Yep. All right. We will send, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Thank you very much for the conversation. As I said, I'm looking forward to checking out Daytona at SEATS next year. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Sean, I appreciate the time and the opportunity to, and you know, enjoyed your relationship over the years and looking forward to seeing you in Daytona.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Craig Neeb. As he said, you can connect with him on LinkedIn, Craig Neeb, N-E-E-B. But you can always go to sportsgeekhq.com/, and the episode number in this case, 211. So sportsgeekhq.com/211. And you can do that for all Sports Geek podcast. You can find them all at sportsgeekhq.com. As I discussed earlier, digitaltodollars.com, the book is starting to come along, starting to actually put pen to paper and putting getting the words onto the page. A shout out to Fiona Green. I got a copy of Winning with Data this week, an actual hard copy after reading the pre-release before it was out. If you work in sports, and you work in data, it's a must read. And the thing is, we all work in data or data. So my American friends know what we're talking about. We all work in data. So I really think if you're working in sports biz, whether it be in the digital side, whether it's in the commercial side, but especially if you're in the data and CRM side, you should give Fiona's book a read, Winning with Data. I'll put a link to Amazon and some of the book publishers in the show notes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/211. I will get it right one of these days. It's only been 200 episodes. You reckon I'd get it right by now? But it does inspire me for my book, Digital to Dollars. You can find out more about that at digitaltodollars.com. At the moment, I'm sort of balancing the work of working on the book as well as doing work around the workshops that Digital Dollars is based upon. So helping teams understand their audience and content distribution, and that sort of getting your digital house in order and helping tell that story for your commercial team and your sponsors. And then most of the work in the Digital Dollars process is in developing your rate card and the story around your rate card, and then helping your commercial team to develop digital commercial pitches that include the branded content piece. So you're getting revenue for including sponsors in that content, but then also the really big opportunity that is the sponsor activations and the digital activations, and integrating those with what you're doing in stadium, in broadcast, and everything around that. So my goal is the digital is going to be the primary driver, revenue driver for sports by 2030, and Digital Dollars is built for that goal. So if you would like to get more money from your digital efforts, if you would like to get more kudos for your digital team, that's exactly what I'm building the process for, and that's what I want to help you do. So that's digitaltodollars.com. As always, you can reach out to me, send me an email, ask more questions. I'm happy to get on a call and explain the process and how it gets implemented at a team or a league level. Lastly, Sports Geek Nation, if you have been hearing me talk about this and have not yet signed up, now definitely is the time. SportsGeekNation.com is where you go to find out. It has access to our Sports Geek Nation Slack community, We've also got the Sports Geek Nation Facebook group. We recently launched the members area, sportsgeeknation.com/funnilyenoughmembersarea, where if you log in with your account, you will get access to now the recaps of the AMAs, the Ask Me Anything, with Sports Geek Nation members. So we have currently done two, and the third one is currently underway. So Tim Baker from Adelaide United, thank you very much for being the first one off the bat. Alistair Hogg, answering questions out of Dubai in his role at the ICC. And now Liam Murphy, who is at Calisthenics Victoria, is answering questions. And so it only works because of the members that are in there asking the questions, and more importantly, also the people like Tim, Alistair and Liam that are giving up their time to answer the questions. And I've been really pleased with the deep knowledge and thought that's been put into both sides of that equation, both the questions and then the answers that are given. So as a member, you'll have access to the full transcripts. Obviously, you can dive into Slack and read them. We want to make sure they're not lost and you know, in the scrolling past of the messages that that happens in Slack. The way our Slack works is we only get access to the last 10,000 messages. We are currently, I think we're past 35,000 messages in the Sports Geek Nation Slack. So we archive that. That will be available in the members area. If you're not yet a member, go to sportsgeekhq.com and you'll see one of the highlights from Tim's first AMA. So we'll be releasing some highlights, but the full access will be available in sportsgeeknation.com in the Slack community. So please, please join up. If you've got any questions, send me a tweet or send me an email. But we would love to, we'd love to see you in there and involved. Until next week, until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.